My name is Jeannie Olson, and the name of this class is Angels, Angels, Yes, Angels. And for my introduction, I am going to read a story. And this is a true story, and it is one of the stories that got me interested in angels. The background of this story is that, Anne was a young university student. She was home for the summer, and she was visiting with friends in a small town, and it got later than she expected it to be, and she had to walk home in the dark, which was several blocks away. And this is her story. As she walked along under the tall elms, Diane asked God to keep her from harm and danger. When she reached an alley, which was a shortcut to her house, she decided to take it. However, halfway down the alley, she noticed a man standing at the end as though he were waiting for her. She became uneasy and shot up a prayer asking for God's protection. Instantly, a comfortable feeling of quietness and security surrounded her. She had the unmistakable sense that someone was walking with her. When she reached the end of the alley, she walked right past the man and arrived home safely. The following day, she read in the paper that a young girl had been raped in the same alley just 20 minutes after she had been there. Diane thought she could possibly identify the man, so she went to the police station and told her story. They asked her if she would be willing to look at a lineup to see if she could identify him. She asked, and she identified the man. She asked the policeman if he would ask the man one question for her. She was curious to know why he had not attacked her. When the policeman asked him, the man answered, "Well, because she wasn't alone. There were two tall men walking on either side of her." It was this book, which is called When Angels Appear, that got me started on my quest for knowledge about angels. And this book was written by Hope McDonald, and when I worked for Young Life, we spent a summer together in Colorado, and she had written a book about prayer, she had written a book about obedience, and this was her third book that came out, so I just naturally bought the book because I loved her writing. So I read this, and the first two-thirds of this book are stories of people who have had angel experiences. And the second third of the book talks about who angels are and talks about the biblical references, and that started my whole interest. Except I thought, you know, I love Hope McDonald. I think she's a woman of God. I believe her. But if I'm really going to believe that there are angels in 1987, which is when I started this, I'm going to go back and look and see what the Bible said. So in the back of this book, there are the 273 different biblical references to angels, Old and New Testament. So I went back in the summer of 1988. I sat down and looked up and wrote out longhand all of these 273 different references. And it wasn't until I was all done that someone said to me, "Jeannie, you know there's a computer program. All you do is type in the word angels, and it spews out all this information in just moments." And I'm really glad I didn't know that, because I might have taken the shortcut. And then I wouldn't have been able to really see the context of what all these passages were in and the stories that they were part of. So I'm glad that I didn't know that. What I'm going to do in the next 50 minutes is talk quite fast, because I put this together for an hour presentation for adult ed, and I know we also want to have time for questions and answers, and maybe you have some angel stories you'd like to share. So I'm going to talk fairly fast. I'm afraid I have to leave some stuff out. But I'm going to be referring to biblical stories. I'm going to be reading to you and telling to you some stories that have been told to me that I have read. And I'm going to be sharing some experiences as a hospital chaplain. I'm a hospital chaplain in Davenport, Iowa. And I have some really neat stories of some of my patients. So that's kind of the gist of what I'm going to do. I believe in angels because the Bible explicitly says that they exist. There are only three passages that I'm going to be reading to you from the Bible, because most of the passages I can just refer to and you will know what they are. But this one is from Psalm 103. It says, "Bless the Lord, you his angels, you mighty ones who do his word, hearkening to the voice of his word. Bless the Lord, all his hosts," another word for angels, his ministers that do his will. Angels move at the command of God. And the other one that I'm going to refer to is from Hebrews, and it says, the whole first chapter of Hebrews refers to angels, and it says, are they not ministering spirits sent forth for the sake of those who are to obtain salvation? Being a Lutheran, I was really concerned whether Martin Luther believed in angels. So I went back, I had to dig a little, but found in his table talk his definition of angels, so I was thrilled to know he believed in them. An angel is a spiritual creature without a body, as we know it, created by God for the service of Christendom and the church. Now, a lot of you have seen the book that Billy Graham put out, Angels, God's Secret Agents, and I think it's one of the first books that came out about angels. And his definition is, angels belong to a uniquely different dimension of creation which we can scarcely comprehend. Angels have been given higher knowledge, power, and mobility than we have been given. They are God's messengers whose chief business it is to carry out God's orders. One of the places in his book, I usually have all these stacks of books that I read from, and I didn't want to carry them all to hold them, and so I have just written all this stuff out rather than looking it all up. But in his book he says, one angel is indescribably mighty, as though an extension of the arm of God. And I love that definition and that metaphor, because angels, as I have said, only work from God. People do angels a disservice, and I have already talked to one of the members of this class about this, who is already disappointed. But we do a disservice to think that we're going to be angels when we die. Now, I know this is really going to be a disappointment for some of you, because you were planning on it, but there's nowhere in scriptures that says we're going to become angels. And that doesn't mean that you might not fly, as one person wanted to do. But angels are created, and they are a separate unit of creatures. So you will not be becoming an angel. However, I don't think many people know that. Even our Lutheran magazine, which I would like to point out here, in its cartoons, and this was in, I don't know, a couple years ago, but for 2 months in a row, they gave us cartoons about angels. And in all of them, the people who had died were given wings and halos. And what do we think if they're given wings and halos? That they have become angels. So even our Lutheran magazine, I've been dying to just kind of write them a little letter and explain this flaw in their theology. But, you know, I mean, I don't have an MDiv behind my name, and so I haven't really felt like I could do that. But we don't become angels, despite what the Lutheran magazine has to say about it. Also, art hasn't done a lot for perpetuating what angels are really like. You know, the little cherub heads? I was going to go to the library upstairs here and find any angel books for children, but they always have, you know, blonde hair about the length of mine, but usually very curly, and they're chubby-cheeked, and little kids kind of a little too plump. And that's the idea that we get of angels. When, of all the descriptions that I have read of angels, what they are in their angel form, you know, 7 feet tall, very powerfully built, extremely strong, they can roll away the stone in front of Jesus' tomb, they move from place to place very quickly, although they're not omnipresent like God. Only God is omnipresent. God is all places at all times. Angels are only in one place at one time. Very beautiful, they have been described as very, very beautiful. Angels have two purposes. Their purpose in heaven is to praise and worship God. Psalms tell us about this. And their purpose on heaven, which is, or on earth, which is what we're going to talk about today, is to serve God, reaching out to humankind. How many angels are there? Well, Jesus said he could have called on 12 legions. Daniel said he saw 10,000 times 10,000. We know there are a lot. We know that they can take the form of a human being, as in the story of Sarah, when she was told that she was going to, Sarah and Abraham, that they were going to have a child. Those are some of the things that we do. Now, there's no place in the Bible you can just kind of like an encyclopedia, open it up, and find out what an angel is. So we have to pick and choose from these 273 different places to get a picture of what they are. And that's just a biblical picture. The picture that I'm also describing for you comes from the stories of the people that have shared their angel experiences with me. Angels sort of have four different jobs. One of their jobs is a messenger. This is the part you get to show your biblical knowledge. Think of the times in the Bible where angels have been messengers.
Then
share with me. Excuse
Jesus
me.
Gabriel.
Gabriel. What did Gabriel do?
He told Mary she was to be.
Okay, told Mary she was to be the mother of the Messiah. What else?
The angel who appeared and told Joseph to leave Egypt.
Right, going to Egypt. Very good. What else?
The angel that appeared to Zechariah.
Excuse me?
Angel that Gabriel also appeared to Zechariah.
Okay, great.
How about the wrestling?
Jacob.
Jacob? Okay. Anything else?
Is it angels who appeared to the shepherds?
Angels appeared to the shepherds and said, my goodness, go to Bethlehem, you're going to find this wonderful surprise. Samson's mother was also given a message. And Mary Magdalene at the tomb, I guess you said that one. One of the stories that I'm going to share with you, again, a true story. The background of this is Evelyn and Joe had each been a widow and a widower for several years and met each other. And Joe was a physician and had been told he had heart problems and he was to slow down. He slowed down, but still found out that that wasn't enough and that he was going to have to face open heart surgery. And Joe didn't even know, and the doctors didn't know, whether his body was even strong enough to undergo surgery. And so they had to make the decision, were they going to go for the surgery or are they just going to live out the days that Joe had left? They were just trying to make this decision. After going to sleep that night, Evelyn awoke, aware of a strong presence standing beside their bed. For an instant, the room became aglow, and every part of it was flooded by an all-encompassing light. Many times when people share angel experiences, they will talk about this light and this aura that is around the angel. And it was accompanied by a feeling of enormous gladness. She remembers thinking, this must be a glimpse of what heaven is like. She knew it was an angel standing by the bed and was not surprised when the angel spoke to her. Your husband is stronger than you think. He is God's child. Do not fear. Full of wonder, she woke up her husband and told him what had happened. After talking it over in great detail, they said a prayer of thanksgiving. When they finished praying, they were too excited to go back to sleep. I think that's kind of an understatement. An awesome quiet filled the room, and the angel was gone. There was still a peaceful feeling about it. They both dropped off to a deep sleep. A week later, tests showed that the damaged artery had been closed off, and a bypass had naturally occurred. They had many more wonderful years together. The message came that they were going to be that he was going to be all right. So angels are messengers, and that's literally what the word means, is messenger. Another job that angels have are protectors. Now these stories are a little harder to think of in the Bible, but can you think of some where an angel protected somebody?
Daniel
in the lion's den. That is the most common one, Daniel in the lion's den.
The three men in the fiery furnace.
Yeah. A fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay, very good. Paul was facing shipwreck. There was an angel that came when Elijah was fleeing from the Syrians or fighting with the Syrians. I have a story to tell about Tim Wooldridge. Do any of you know Tim, or that was here? He just left today. He knew that I did this class, and he shared a story with me. He's a counselor, a psychologist in the Seattle area. He's also an ordained minister. And he said that when he was in seminary, he had a nighttime job in Minneapolis and came out very late one night and it snowed, one of those beautiful snows that now there's no wind and all the snow is kind of settled a foot deep all around. And he had to go catch a bus to take home. And it was absolutely deserted in downtown Minneapolis. He went to go to the bus stop, and there was no one around, and all of a sudden a very large, threatening man came right toward him. Tim said he was very scared, and there was kind of no place to run sort of thing. And he was standing in this little, you know, the bus stop thing that has three sides. He was standing there, and the man came up, you know, as I said, threateningly. And all of a sudden, the man looked past him, and his eyes got really big, and he drew back. You know how when you're afraid, your eyes get big? He drew back, and Tim, of course, you know, when you notice someone's looking past you and looking frightened, you turn around. And he turned around, and there was this little bag lady kind of humped over, all in gray with these layers of clothes and her two bags. And Tim then looked back, and this guy who had this threatening look on his face and then this fearful look on his face just took off running. Well, Tim thought, you know, I'm glad he's leaving, but why could he be so afraid of this little lady? And he turned back around to see the little lady, and she was totally gone. Totally gone. Now, Tim looked in the snow. It had been snowing all night. There's not a thing on this. And there's no place in the snow where she had been or where she retreated. He walked around the thing looking in the snow, no tracks. Looked in the little doorways, no lady anywhere. Now, my question to him was, do you think he saw a little bag lady? Because this fellow was powerful enough that a bag lady and a little seminary student were not going to be a problem for him. I have a feeling what he saw was not a bag lady, but it's what Tim saw. And he said, I said, Tim, do you think that was an angel's? He said, without question, without question. So, a protector story. I was going to read you a story, but I think that one's actually better. However, one story I do want to share with you is a story where six people saw all the same thing. And I may sort of half tell, half read this one. Because so many times skeptics say, well, you know, the person dreamed this, or they've been taking drugs and maybe they're hallucinating or whatever, but come up with all sorts of reasons that this really couldn't have happened. In this story, it takes place in North Dakota, and John was the youngest of five children. And his parents, when you're in North Dakota and your parents go to town, they have to stay overnight because the town is so far away. I can see you nodding. You know how what the wilderness of North Dakota is like. And so Mom and Dad went to town. John took care of the brothers and sisters. We had fed them dinner. They went upstairs into this big old farmhouse, getting ready for bed. And this is what happened. Suddenly John looked over at his two-year-old brother and saw with his horror that he was playing with a lighted candle and was sticking unlit matches into it and watching with glee as they burst into flame. Before John could rush to his brother's side, the candle tipped over and the fire began to spread up the curtains. No one can explain why, but in the middle of all this, the children looked over at the door and they saw a tall, beautiful angel standing in the doorway. The angel simply blew out the fire, turned around, and left. They ran down the hall after the angel, but it was nowhere to be seen. Now the brothers and sisters are all married and have children of their own. But when they get together, they often talk about the time they saw the angel blow out that fire that cold winter night. Those five brothers and sisters could not be convinced that this did not happen to them. The next job that angels have, as we heard in Hebrews, is that they're ministering spirits. Think of a time that angels ministered in the Old or New Testament. Getting harder, aren't they? You should have gone for the first one because now they're getting harder.
In the Garden of Gethsemane.
Wonderful. In the Garden of Gethsemane, the angels came and ministered to Jesus. How about at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, before, when he comes out of the wilderness? He's been in the wilderness all that time, and the angels come and minister to him. Elijah, when he's fleeing from Jezebel. We won't go on. This is a place that I want to say we never want to confuse the Holy Spirit and angels. Angels minister to us physically, and the Holy Spirit ministers to us spiritually. So the Holy Spirit ministers in us, and angels minister to us. One of the times they minister to us are times of illness. There's a story in, it's called A Book of Angels by Sophie Burnham. Again, I didn't bring the book, but I just Xeroxed the story. She came out with a book, I think, in 1990. I was lucky enough to get it, I think, about 4 weeks after it came out. Her book was such a big hit, and in the end, she said, anybody who's had an angel story, write to me. And so all of these letters came flooding in, and then the next Christmas, which was a very good time to come out with a book about angels, she came out with a second book called Angel Letters, and these are the experiences that people shared with them. Here's the story that she said about angels ministering to people at times of illness. This little girl was a small child, 1947. She had gotten measles and her temperature went up to 107 degrees. Her parents then rushed her, of course parents would, to a doctor, to a hospital, and she remembers the doctors and nurses moving around, wrapping her in ice cold blankets, and then she went into a delirious state. This is a great story for Lutherans. Now listen to this. My mother told me that prior to this I had been delirious. Then I suddenly started speaking clearly. The child is three. I was saying the Nicene Creed and repeating the liturgy from our Lutheran Book of Worship. How many of you have three-year-olds that can say the Nicene Creed totally and the Lutheran Book of Worship service liturgy? I don't think so. She said it frightened her because she wasn't aware that I knew the words to those, and I was saying them perfectly. Then I started talking about angels and how beautiful they were. I have a very clear recollection of floating up in the corner of a hospital room with an angel on either side. To this day, I can close my eyes and I can hear the music, which cannot be described, and I can see these two beings in white with a golden aura around them. There was an opening in the ceiling with a long lighted path and all golden. They asked me if I wanted to come with them, and I clearly remember saying, no, I wanted my mother. Isn't that wonderful? This is the line I like the best. I guess the most profound effect this experience has had on me is that it has taken away all fear of death. I know there's life after death because I have seen it. And I would have to say that that's true of me. I don't know if I've ever been really afraid of death, but after studying all of this material about angels, I just know. I've read all the books about life after life and all those books that are talking about that. But after studying this, you know, I just know what I'm going to see, and I'm not in a hurry to go, I might add, but I know that it's going to be beautiful and exciting. Angels also escort people at times of death. If you can't see that, he is being taken up by two angels. We can't help that, Mr. Giebner. After all, you've had well over 70 years to make out your will. So we have two escorting angels helping Mr. Giebner, who's fighting it because he hasn't made out his will.
Good news, bad news.
Jesus tells us a story about Lazarus. The Lazarus is covered with all the sores, the poor Lazarus, and he dies, and he's being taken up to the bosom of Abraham on the wings of angels. Again, escorting angels at time of death. In Shakespeare's plays Hamlet, good night, sweet prince, and angels take thee to thy rest. Again, angels escorting at times of death. Billy Graham, in his book God's Secret Agents, says of his paternal grandmother, hundreds of accounts record the heavenly escort of angels at death. When my maternal grandmother died, for instance, the room seemed to be filled with a heavenly light. She sat up in bed and almost laughingly said, I see Jesus, and he has his arms outstretched to me. And I see Ben, Ben was her husband who had died previous to this, and I see the angels. And she slumped over, absent from the body, but present to the Lord. In my work as a hospital chaplain, I haven't often shared that I teach this class on angels. But one day I was brought in to a patient's room, and she had come into the hospital. She had cancer. I work mainly with cancer patients. She had come in to the hospital and for pain, and within a week, her pain was so bad, and her cancer had progressed so much that she was dying. We had some tremendous conversations before this. And by this time she was comatose. And she had a family of about 15. She had a lot of brothers and sisters and husband and children, and they were all there and they wanted to be there when she died. She'd been comatose for about 2 days. One Sunday morning I went in, it wasn't a day for me to work, but I knew that Connie was dying. And so I went up there and we had some prayers together, and the family said, you know, one of the things we're afraid of is that Connie will have to die alone. And they said, we're here. I mean, she's not going to die without our presence here, but only you can die your own death. And somehow we want to be able to help her through that. It's one of the fears that we have. And they said, we think it's one of her fears too. And I said, well, I don't often share this, but I teach a class on angels. And I want to share one of my beliefs about them, something I've done research on, that I do believe there are escorting angels. And whether they are our guardian angel that has been with us our whole time, which we'll talk about later, or whether that is just their job, I do believe that they're there. And I'll tell you another story if I have a chance. And I said this standing next to Connie. I was just kind of soothing her brow, and I was holding her hand as I was talking to her family about this. So I said, would you like me to pray about that? And that Connie could be reassured that she won't have to go through this alone, and you will be also. He said, we'd really like that. So I prayed. The next morning, I got a call at 6 that Connie had died. And I didn't come in right away because another chaplain was on call, but I came in at 8 and they called down to me and said, Connie's body is still here and her brother-in-law is here. Why don't you come up? So I did, and I've been a chaplain for 8 years, and seeing people who are deceased is not upsetting to me, and I've seen lots of people who have died. And I walked in the room and I looked at Connie and I went, oh! Just like that, I mean literally. Because there was Connie lying on this bed with the most beautiful smile on her face I have ever, 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 ever seen. And I said to her brother-in-law, is there a story behind this? He looked at me and smiled. He was Hawaiian and Christian. And they believe you should stay with the body all the time, so that's why he was there. And he said, we knew Connie was dying. Her vitals were going. She had been hooked up to a monitor and her breathing, and we knew there. So we were all standing around Connie's bed. We were talking to her, and we were telling her we were there. We were telling her the angel was going to be there. And we were telling her we loved her, etc., etc. Remember, she'd been comatose for at least 2.5 days now. And Connie opened her eyes and looked up to the corner of her room, and she smiled. And she died. And that smile was still there. Now, kind of the afterword of this story is that I heard later. Her body was taken to the funeral home. And the funeral director, when the body was revealed to him, said, how'd the hospital do that? We didn't do that. We didn't do that. But even the funeral home director had never seen a smile on a person's face like Connie had. And I do believe that she saw that angel, and so does her family. There aren't as many stories of people having angel experiences when they die as there used to be. When the person died on the family farm, and you know, they didn't have the drugs that we have today, and there were more of these stories, like Billy Graham's grandmother. But now, thank God, we have morphine and other drugs like this that can keep people's pain controlled. So there aren't these stories. But when I was doing research on this, I worked with an Episcopal priest that had been a chaplain at that point for, I think, 25 years. And I said, have you had any angel stories you'd like to share with me? And he said, yes. He said, we had a little girl up in the pediatrics ward who was 5 years old, and she was dying of kidney failure. And her parents were so young, they were practically children themselves, and they couldn't deal with having a five-year-old daughter die. And they lived about 30 miles from our hospital. And they were increasingly not coming to the hospital to be with their daughter, Clarissa. And so the hospital staff in the pediatric ward became this child's family. And one morning when the nurse went in who was taking care of Clarissa, Clarissa said to the nurse very matter-of-factly, there was an angel at my window this morning. And the nurse said, oh, what do you say? Well, the next morning, this same nurse went into Clarissa's room, and Clarissa said, again very matter-of-factly, you know that angel that I told you was at my window last night or that morning? Well, he was at my window last night again. Well, deciding that this wasn't something that had been covered in nursing school, the nurse went to the chaplain and said, what do you make of this? Do you think she's hallucinating? Do you really think she's seeing angels? What do you think? And he said, I do believe that she saw that angel. Because in her case especially, with parents who weren't going to be there, perhaps, when she died, God allowed her to see that angel so that she knew that she wasn't going to be alone in those final times. I have a story about another child, but I think I'll come back to it if I have a chance to do that. You know, angels at this point are kind of trendy. When I started this in 1987, it wasn't trendy. But now, I would walk into a store, for example, and I'd say, do you have any books about angels? And they'd look at me like, oh gosh, one kook a day, and I have to get this one. And whether it was a secular bookstore or a Christian bookstore, you know, they had to think hard to come up with a book about angels. I guess I would come at this from another direction. Do you believe that there are, now whatever you want to call it, satanic powers, demonic powers, powers of darkness? Are there evil powers in the world? Walter Cronkite, in an American poll, said on CBS that 82% of Americans believed in, and I quote, a personal devil. Now, I think that's a pretty conservative term, personal devil, because that means it's a force that is, in fact, involved in and engaging in people's lives. 82%. When you walk into a store and ask about angel material, like I said, you get very little. If you walk into a store and say, excuse me, do you have any books about witchcraft, you know, Satanism, crystals, etc.? Oh yes, we have this whole section of book about evil powers. And I guess I believe that if Satan, if we want to call him that, has his agents of evil, then God on the other side has his agents of good, and these would be angels. The one other thing that angels do is that they are guardian angels, and this is, of course, the one we all like the most. And the scripture that that comes from is Psalm 9. Give his angels charge concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will bear you up in their hands lest you strike your foot against a stone. Another one that is quoted for guardian angels is Matthew 18, but I'm not going to quote that right now. One story I just love is the story about the little kid who doesn't want to go to bed, and you know, they brush their teeth and they've read the stories and rubbed the back and said the prayers, and this little Billy just doesn't want anybody to leave. And mom's getting exasperated because she really needs to get going. And so she, and Billy finally says, I'm scared. I'm scared. I want you to stay because I'm scared. And Billy's mother said, Billy, you don't need to be scared because God has sent a guardian angel to watch over you, and he's probably just sitting there on the end of your bed. And Billy sits up in bed. And he looks at the end of the bed, and he looks back at his mother and he said, I'd rather have somebody with skin on him. Sometimes children are too young to tell about guardian angels. I do love this story. This is the family circus. The little boy is in bed. I don't know if you can see that. They say angels hover near when the child is sleeping, and mother envisions two little angels. Sounds nice. I wonder if it's true. And the little boy comes out, something's flying around in my room and it woke me up.
There's your short-haired angels again.
Yes, a short-haired angel, that's right. When our boys were small, and I had just started this study, I would read to them from this book, and I, as I said, two-thirds of it are stories, and they had their favorites, and they just loved them. And I would say to the boys, boys, you know, the older you get, the less I'm going to be involved in your lives. You know, you're going to be out riding your bike and playing baseball and soccer and going to school, and I'm not going to be there to protect you. And so one of the things I want you to know that I do for you is that I pray that a guardian angel is there watching over you. And this is the kind, I mean, I want a big angel for my, I've got two boys. So I didn't want some Cupid little thing watching my kids. I want a real angel. So this is the sort of angel that I pictured. And you've probably seen, this picture used to only be in antique stores, and now you can get it on cards and so on. But I also said to them, if you find yourself in trouble, don't pray to an angel. The Bible is explicit in Colossians 2 and in Revelations 22. We don't pray to angels. What happened in the Middle Ages and what's happening now, and I'll get to this a little bit later, and I'll get to this now, is the New Age stuff. where we get so hyped up and excited about these trendy angels that the New Age folks are now focusing on that instead of the God who created them, who sends them out. That's the difference between the New Age angels and Christian angels. The other day I went to a bookstore, somebody said, now there's a new book out, you know, have you read it? And the name of the book is Ask Your Angel. Well, I went to the bookstore, I was excited about this, flipped through the book, and I went, there is nothing in here about the Bible, about Jesus, or about God. And I realized I had picked up a New Age book that believes, and before that I had come across a book called Angels on Assignment. And I had read this book, and it's an old book, but in it, these people kind of commanded their angels to do this and could make them appear when they wanted them to appear and all this sort of stuff. And I went, this isn't anything like all the other books that I've read. And so I just put it at the bottom of my drawer and decided, I don't know what to do with this, but it doesn't follow all the biblical things that I've read. So there is definitely a difference. In Paul talks in 2 Corinthians 11, Satan masquerades as an angel of light. And I think there's a place that we have to be careful, because angels aren't always the angels that God has sent. Let me see. Before I go any farther with the serious, I want to bring out this one by sitting on my desk. This kid's a mess. Do guardian angels take days off? He's been through the mill today and feels like there hasn't been a guardian angel in his life today. As you can see, he's absolutely bedraggled. One of the questions I had to deal with as I came up and put this thing together is, what about the time? What about the time one of your children died? What about the time your spouse had an automobile accident? What about the time somebody became disabled? Where was their guardian angel? Where was their guardian angel? You think about Daniel in the lion's den. Somebody talked about that one. Great! Daniel didn't get hurt. But think about the early Christians in the Roman Colosseums that were eaten by lions. Where was their guardian angel? We think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. King Nebuchadnezzar threw them in this fiery furnace. They didn't even smell like smoke. And yet you think about 6 million Jews who died in the Nazi concentration camp fires. Or you think about Elijah. He was in the wilderness. He was exhausted there for 40 days. An angel came along, baked him a little cake, and sustained him. Oh, real nice story. But then you look at the news, and you see all these children with bloated stomachs. In Africa, or you see the children on the streets of America that don't have enough to eat, and you say, where's their guardian angel? You know, and I had to deal with this, and the books that I read had to deal with this. Most of them chose not to. I think about Michelle Ikus. I was the chaplain for Candlelighters, which is a support group for parents whose children have cancer. Michelle was 9 years old and never saw this child when she didn't have her guardian angel pin on her little shirt. And her mom did too. She died at 9 of cancer. Where was her guardian angel? We look at, as I tried to juggle this in my mind, why doesn't this fit? I looked at Jesus and I looked at the times that he brought people back from the dead. You know, Lazarus' daughter, Jairus' daughter and Lazarus and the widow's son. He didn't bring everybody back from the dead that he could have. He did it at select times. So I looked at the scriptures and I thought, God does intervene, but not always. God does send angels, but only sometime. And I think God does that because he would really rather have the extraordinary happen through the ordinary. Some of you were at the class that I taught a couple days ago about reaching out and doing caring visits on the sick and the dying and the aged. People are having crisis. God expects us to be the ones that are his hands reaching out to each other. He's not going to send angels all the time to intervene, because then what would he expect? We'd be expecting him to do that rather than having us reaching out to do that sort of thing to each other. The bottom line, of course, is we have no idea. We have no idea why sometimes a guardian angel comes, protecting angel, a messenger angel, and sometimes an angel doesn't. I'm going to be able to do this. This is good. Two quick things that I want to talk about is the gentle way angels seem to be able to do their work. Not spectacular. I think if I was an angel, I'd kind of go, ta-da, you know, here I am, you know, to save the day sort of thing. Instead, they slip in, they do their work, and they slip out, just like the one that blew out the candle. Now, you read about stories about somebody, you know, capsizing in their boat, and they're swimming along, and they know they're drowning, and there's no one around for miles, and somebody comes along and puts them in the lifeguard hold, swims them to shore, drops them on the sand, they get their breath, they turn around, there's nobody for miles down the beach. Or someone whose child is sitting in the way of an oncoming car, and someone picks up the child and moves it out of the way, and the mother comes and picks up the child and wants to turn to thank the person, and they're not there. Now, none of the books really sort of answers this directly, but I would say, because of the research that I've done, I'd say, if so, we can't thank them. We don't even have a moment to thank these angels, so we instead turn and thank the God that sent them. The other thing I want to say is that people are very hesitant about sharing their angel stories, especially in 1988 when I started this study. I would share this. What happened is I taught this at our church for adult ed, and then the word just sort of spread, and so I've done it at other churches and women's groups and Christian groups and all sorts of things like that, retreats, workshops. And people will come up to me and say, you know, I've only told my spouse this, but I want you to hear this. And then they'll recount an angel story. Or sometimes they'll say, I've told my minister and my spouse, but that's many times all the farther it got. And one of the reasons is because, until now, when it's trendy, people would think you were a little nuts. You know, you were maybe taking a little much, too much medication, or you were a pretty imaginative person, or you were out in left field somehow. So people didn't share these experiences. The other thing is that when people have had angel experiences, it has been so personal and so intimate, and they just know that they have been touched by God in such a beautiful way that they don't have to share it with anybody because they know that they've had it. And sometimes it is too personal to even share. When I decided to put this together, I decided to do it for several reasons. I figured if I'd been to a Christian college and had 4 religion classes and never heard anything about angels, and I had a semester of seminary and hadn't heard anything about angels, and had worked for a Christian organization for 2.5 years and didn't know anything about angels, that probably the average person was just like me. And, you know, we read about it, and we go through the Bible study, and the angel said this, and we just kind of go right on. We don't know any more than the words that we've read. So I thought, people need to know more about this. A friend of mine lives in Phoenix, Arizona, and on September 29th, 1991, somehow somebody in the higher-ups decided to take all 3 scriptures for the day and make them about angels. So ministers were all of a sudden caught. They had to preach about angels if they were going to preach about the designated text. And this is the first paragraph about this minister's sermon, of this minister's sermon. It's St. Michael and All the Angels Sunday. And he says, in 36 years in the pulpit, now 36 times 52 sermons that this person's probably given, I have never preached a sermon about angels. As a matter of fact, I've never even thought a great deal about angels. But this Sunday, he had to and gave a little sermon. Not that it was very good, I might add, but anyway. That's just my opinion. We as Lutherans feel pretty comfortable about Jesus and God. We're okay there. But you move over here to the Holy Spirit, and gee, we're not as comfortable with the Holy Spirit. And then you get over here to angels, and my goodness, that's kind of a Catholic thought. You know, we're not good on this stuff over here at all. So I thought, we need to know. We need to know more about this aspect of our faith. So that's one of the reasons I put this together. Then, the final reason I put this together is after reading all these biblical accounts and all these, I have a stack of books about angels, and many of them give personal accounts of people who have had these experiences. all of this has expanded my faith. I have seen a whole new dimension of who God is, because I see how much God must love us. If he would intervene in our lives by sending an angel for some reason, even if it's not my life, if it's somebody else's life, I see this as a personal God who wants to express his love to us in a very personal way. So I see God as more alive and more personal and more active. And, you know, what is faith? Faith is mystery, and faith is an awesome experience. And faith isn't knowing the tangible, but faith is believing the intangible. And I think angels are one more tangible experience of a very intangible God. And angels, in a way, are a signature of God's presence and care and love for us. I'll open this up. Questions, stories, responses, whatever you'd like to do at this point.
You'd like to see a beautiful sermon on angels. St. Michael's Church in Fort Bragg, California. All of their stained glass windows are devoted to angels.
Well, of course, St. Michael's.
Yeah, it's a very old church, but the stained glass art is absolutely fantastic. They say, "And crown him Lord of all, the angels are pouring out these stars for his diadem."
Sounds beautiful.
It just moved me. I've seen a lot of stained glass windows, but
There's something about angel windows. They're just so powerful. And Michael is considered the archangel. He's the protector of the Jewish people. He's kind of the defender and the warrior in the hierarchy of angels.
So that's a total sermon to angels. Every window is an angel window.
Beautiful, beautiful. So that church is well aware of angels. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Anybody else?
Do you have a bibliography of books you...
How perfect did you ask this? This is not a setup. What I did, I just happened to have this because everyone's usually digging through my bag of books, you know, so I thought, maybe I should just write these out. The one on the top, which is When Angels Appear, is the one that I've used the most and I think is the best. When I was here 2 years ago, I read this awful book that they have in the library, Everything You Wanted to Know About Angels from a Catholic Perspective, stuff you didn't even want to know. So there are books out there that are not on this list. These are kind of books that I felt were the best, and then I listed children's books also in the bottom that don't just show these chubby-cheeked little cherubs. So if anyone else wants one of these, they're up here, you can certainly help yourself. Yes?
C.S. Lewis, 1941, wrote Screwtape Letters.
Yes.
And in the introduction, he says he doesn't believe that the devil is the opposite of God, because there can be no antithesis of God, no one created being. And therefore, the devil is the opposite of St. Michael. Mm-hmm. St. Michael is the head of the angels, even as the devil, or Satan, as we might call him, Lucifer, is the head of the demons. Do you find any interest or worry in a study on demons? If you think, you know, we should be studying angels and learning about them, where is the study on demons?
There are lots of studies on demons, and I guess that's why I didn't choose to do that, is because you can walk in any bookstore and there are all these books about demons from a Christian perspective and, of course, from a New Age perspective. And so I didn't choose to do that, but yes, there's as much to study on the demon side as there is on the angel side, but I just chose to do this because...
And you see them as the counterparts of
the... Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And it's very theologically sound that C.S. Lewis... I mean, I wouldn't argue with C.S. Lewis. Who am I? But, you know, I agree with him from the research that I've done, yeah. That book, Frank Peretti's book, Piercing the Darkness, kind of along that same line. Obviously, this is taking, you know, a story, and you have to figure out what is fact and what is truth and what is fiction in here. But it's kind of along that same line. It was a very interesting reading.
So in that book and in his other book, he talks about spiritual warfare going on around us. Mm-hmm. Do you see that in your study of Scripture and the angels? That there are battles between angels and demons going on around us all the time?
I think there is truth to that. Now, if it's as graphic as Frank Peretti's book, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But I guess I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised, because I believe that there's a power of darkness and that it's very powerful, as do 82% of, you know, Americans. And I believe in the powers that God has given angels. So my guess is if there's an archangel who's a warrior like Michael, he's probably fighting somebody. So, yeah. I'm giving a somewhat vague answer, but that's because, goodness gracious, we're all dealing with stuff that we can't be, you know, 100% sure of. But yeah, that's my belief. Anything else? I don't want to make you late, but we have a few minutes. I've never done this so fast, by the way. I must have forgotten an awful lot. I'll have to go back and see what I missed. Anything else? Anybody have a short story they would like to share? Then I'm going to tell you a story. Tisha is probably my favorite of all patients. Tisha was 9 years old. Tisha came from a dysfunctional family that was... In the years that I knew Tisha, she had cancer and came into our hospital for chemotherapy. I met her mother once. I would hear her talking to her mother on the phone, kind of being the parent of her mother. One day, I said to Tisha, "What can I do for you?" And she said, "I'd really like you to read me some comic books." So I said, "Okay." So I tried to figure out how to read comic books with her in this huge bed, and she was only about this big, and I couldn't do it very well. So I said, "Tisha, move over. I'm climbing in." At which point she giggled, of course. And I, you know, there's probably some rule you're not supposed to climb in a patient's bed, but I decided if I was on top of the sheets and this child wanted this, I really didn't care about the rules. So I climbed on top of her bed and proceeded to read these comic books to her. That cemented our relationship. We became best friends after that. One morning when I came in, I normally go to my office, and instead I went straight to the pediatric ward. All I can say is the Holy Spirit sent me there. And the nurse said, "Wow, am I glad to see you. Tisha's had a terrible night." And I said, "What's the matter?" She said, "She's having nightmares." I said, "Okay." So I walked in and asked Tisha if I could sit down next to her bed. She said, "Yeah." I said, "How are you doing?" She goes, "Not very good. I had terrible dreams." And I said, "Can you tell me about them?" And she said, "Well, I had this dream about this person who came to visit me, and he was dressed all in black, and he had a black hat on, and I couldn't see his face, there was no face, and he had a black trench coat on, and black pants, and black shoes." And I said, "Did he say or do anything?" "No." I said, "Well, how did it make you feel?" And she said, "I was so scared. I just didn't like it at all." And then I said, "Was there anything else to this dream?" And she said, "Yes." And then her eyes just kind of sparkled. And she said, "Yes, there was this person who was all in white." She said, "Jeannie, he was so white, he was whiter than my hospital gown." Well, anything could be easier than the hospital, whiter than the hospital gown. But she said, "It was so white, it was like lightning." She said, I said, "Well, how did this person say anything to you?" And she said, "No." But I said, "Well, how did it make you feel?" And she said, "So happy, just so happy." And her face just kind of glistened. Now, to tell you story before the story, I'd been getting dressed that morning, and on my dresser I have my jewelry. And 9 months previous to this, I had bought one of those cute little guardian angel pins that I said I don't wear because they're little cupids, you know. And I had it on that little card you have it on. I had it sitting there for 9 months. I dusted around it, don't worry. But I picked it up. All I can say is, again, it was the Holy Spirit. I picked it up and put it in my pocket. I had no idea why I did it. So I'm sitting next to Tisha's bed, and I said, "Tisha, you're a Christian, right?" And she goes, "Oh, yes, I believe in God and Jesus." And I said, "Well, good." I said, "Do you know that God has guardian angels that he sends to watch over people like yourself?" Now, I knew Tisha was dying, but I didn't know if Tisha knew Tisha was dying. So I felt like I was walking a thin line here. And I said, "Guardian angels are sent to watch over us no matter where we are or what we do or if we're moving from this world to the next." And she got this look on her face, and I said, "Do you think that might be who that was in white? Because that's kind of who I think it was." She said, yeah, I do." And I said, "Tisha, I happen to have this guardian angel pin, the only one I've ever owned, in my pocket. And I don't want you to think you have to take it, but if you like this pin, I'd love to give it to you." And she was so excited. She said, "Pin it right here in my hospital gown." So we pinned it. Tisha lived about a week and a half after that. And she changed hospital gowns one or two times a day, or would wear little cute little t-shirts, but that pin was always there. The night she died, I got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the operator said, "Chaplain Olson, I know you're not on call, but Tisha's dying and her family wants you to come in." So I came in. I'd never met the father before. It gives you an idea of this family. And they didn't know how to handle a dying 9-year-old. And by now, she had been comatose for 3 days. And I said, "Just get in her bed and hold her and talk to her and just keep talking to her and keep touching her." Well, I'd been there for about an hour or so, and all of a sudden, we knew that we were losing Tisha. And again, like I said, she was comatose, and it's almost so similar to Connie's story that it just chokes me up to even tell it. And we were touching her, and I let the family get close to the bed this time, and I had moved back a little, so I didn't see Tisha's face. But Tisha, just like Connie, opened her eyes, and she looked around at her loved ones, and then she looked up into the corner of the room, and she died. I didn't see this happen. After she died, her father came to me and said, "I know that Tisha has gotten really close to you. Did you see Tisha's face when she died?" And I said, "No." I said, "I was crying." And he said, "You told Tisha about that angel, and she just opened her eyes and looked up into the corner of the room and smiled." Tisha didn't die with a smile on her face, but she died smiling. And he said, "Tisha wanted me to know that if she died, that she wanted to wear that guardian angel pin in her casket." And so 2 days later, when I went to visit Tisha, there was that guardian angel pin. You can see how this obviously affects me, because she was my favorite patient. And so the beauty of the story, of course, is the angel was there. Didn't save her life, but certainly gave her comfort in the end. Again, the bottom line is, we don't understand, but there is beauty in all of this. Thank you for coming. I think you can still get to chapel on time, and I appreciate your being here.